This is the WHL This Week radio edition, presented by the Western Hockey League, the WHL broadcast partners. Here's your host, John Keane.
And welcome to the show. We'll update the playoff chase in moments. The Edmonton Oil Kings are back in the Eastern Conference Final for the first time since 2014. Head coach Brad Lauer will join us. The WHL has announced its finalists for the Doug Lickenheiser Memorial Trophy for Humanitarian Player of the Year. We'll have a look at that. And Sam Cosentino of Rogers Sportsnet pops by to discuss four potential first-round NHL picks this summer from the Western Hockey League. We begin with a playoff update as the Saskatoon Blades and Prince Albert Raiders have held serve on home ice. After falling down 2-0, the Blades got back to Saskatoon to post back-to-back wins. Holding on to a one-goal lead late in the third in Game 4, the Blades got some key insurance. Les Lazarek had the call.
Gerlach trying to bang it in at the side of the net. They score! Hoo-ah! Kyle Krinkovic follows up and bangs one in off of Scott. And it's 3-1 Saskatoon with 3:42 left to go.
Blades coach Mitch Love says in order to win the series, they need to win a game inside Prince Albert's Art Hauser Center.
We got to try to go up there in a building that we haven't had a lot of success in this year. But, you know, we got to continue to grow as a group and fix a few things in our game and go try to win a hockey game.
Defenseman Dawson Davidson had 3 assists in the Game 4 win.
It's a tough rink to play in. Their fans are loud, and they kind of seem like they're right on top of you. They're a great team in their own rink, you know, and they're a good team on the road. I mean, they're not easy to beat in Saskatoon, but at the same time, we need to just limit those three-minute lulls. You know, I feel like when we go to the Art Hauser, we're fine, and then at 3 minutes, they score a couple goals, and, they can strike pretty quick in that building. So, playing a simple game, getting pucks out, not making turnovers at the blue line is pretty key in that rink. So.
Meanwhile, Spokane Chiefs are in a good position to knock off the U.S. Division champion Everett Silvertips. It was a big goal from last week's guest on the show, Adam Beckman, in Game 3 to break a third-period tie.
King getting on him now. Luke Smith with a steal out front, trying to make a move. Everett, there's the Beckman! They score! They score! Adam Beckman with 17!
Mike Boyle on the call there. And the Edmonton Oil Kings are on a big roll. They've won 7 straight playoff games after completing a sweep of the Calgary Hitmen. Andrew Peard countered it down on the Oil Kings broadcast.
The horn sounds, and the Edmonton Oil Kings win. They knock off the Calgary Hitmen by a score of 6-0. They sweep this Battle of Alberta Eastern Conference semifinal. And for the first time since 2014, the Oil Kings are off to the WHL's third round. Oh, what a night.
Andrew spoke with Oil Kings head coach Brad Lauer following the series victory.
Thanks, John. Joined now by Oil Kings head coach Brad Lauer. And just moments ago, your team completed the sweep of their second round series against the Calgary Hitmen. It's a 4-0 sweep. It's a 6-0 win in Game 4, but this series was anything but easy.
No, I mean, they gave us everything we could in the first three games. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Game 1 is probably the game that probably may have helped us the most. Calgary came out and they pretty much dominated Game 1 for us. But we were able to find a way in the third period to come back and score 2 goals and tie the game. And then we got the game winner. And I think that really, really helped us for games 2, 3, and 4.
This team, everyone knows they finished last in the WHL last year, and a remarkable turnaround with them now getting to the Eastern Conference Final. What growth have you seen from your young team from September now here into the middle of April?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing for the group, obviously, I mean, there's been a lot of changes. I mean, the biggest thing is understanding, one, believing in themselves that they can play, and they're good players. And I think as our season grew and we found a lot more consistency in our game. At the start of the year, we started out with 5-0 record. Then we went on the U.S. trip and we lost 8 games. And we ended up as a group. We found ways and understood that we have to win games different ways. And I really liked how we grew as a team and how the growth was as far as finding ways to win hockey games. And the second half of the season, I thought we did a really good job of that.
We've made a lot of the depth of this team throughout the course of this season, and maybe no more prevalent than here in the second round. Trey Fix-Wolanski, a 100-point player in the regular season, he was keyed on. The Hitmen did their job, holding him to just 1 point, but guys like Jake Neighbors, 5 points in the series, Quinn Benjafield, 5 points, Zach Russell out of the press box to 3 points. Just what did you see from this team that led to the depth?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing that led to that, I think, is we played 4 lines all year. We didn't rely on one line or one person to win hockey games. And I think the confidence of the group believed that the way we were doing things. And you know, I think with having Trey on a team, a guy like that, which is for a coach is really phenomenal. But I think he drives competition for other guys on the team, and that drove our younger kids, and we didn't rely on Trey, even though that he's a big part of our group offensively. He made competition for everybody on the team, and like I said, we played four lines all year long, and we didn't overuse anyone, I think. And our guys bought into it.
Finally, Coach, 8-9 days now between now and the start of the third round. Have you thought about the schedule? And if so, what's that kind of look like ahead of the Eastern Conference final?
Yeah, no, I give it a lot of thought. I've, you know, obviously, as the series goes, you're always thinking, you're always planning ahead of things. And, you know, the next couple of days, I'll make sure the guys get the rest that they need to have. And my biggest thing is that we have a few things we need to be better at. We'll work on those next week. As long as I get two practices before we go into the first game, that's the most important thing for me.
Thanks for this, Coach, and congratulations.
Great, thank you.
From the drop of the puck to the Ed Chynoweth Cup, this is the WHL This Week Radio Edition.
Sam Cosentino was fresh off covering the Blades Raiders series for Rogers Sportsnet. He also just released his latest 2019 NHL draft rankings on sportsnet.ca. You know, I talked to you now, and you're getting away from that series. You're traveling, and Scott almost got a guy to walk away after the first three games of what we saw.
You know what, John? It is really tough to walk away because I think there's a lot of meat still left in that series. But on the flip side of that, 14 years of doing this gig, and I don't know if we've ever done three consecutive games in a series before, so it was nice to be able to sink our teeth in at least for a half a series, and of course I'll be watching it closely now that we're on the way.
Yeah, for sure. You know what, that is a bit of an old school feel to it here with kind of the war of words going on between the coaches and the proximity of Prince Albert and Saskatoon. Sam, we get you on because you do your draft rankings for Rogers Sportsnet, and you have your latest April rankings, and again, it includes four players from the Western Hockey League, and you really like Dylan Cousins with the Lethbridge Hurricanes, and you have him at number four this month. What intrigues you about Dylan Cousins?
Well, you have to like the size, you know, 6'3", 180 pounds. He's going to grow into that frame. And I think the thing that really dazzles me most about his game is his skating ability. The fact that he gets into open ice, he can cut the corner on the D-man, he can make plays with speed through neutral ice and play that new age style of game. So, you know, when it comes to Cousins, the other thing I like is the fact that he's dedicated to the craft. I mean, here's a kid at 14 from the UConn. In order to further his hockey career, he felt that it would be best to move to a bigger center in order to play with and against the better competition. And so moving away from home at that young age in order to do that and further your hockey career really tells me something about how he has his eye on the prize. Having said all that, how much further can he go than where he's projected right now? I don't know if he gets into the three hole, but I suppose so.
One guy that might get there just based on need for a defenseman is Bowen Byram. You have him at number five. And boy, I've been pounding the Bowen Byram table all season long. I see him a lot, obviously, in the Western Conference and the season he had here. What do you like about Bowen Byram? I'm sure there's a lot to like about the defenseman in Vancouver.
Well, you know, I've got to see him a couple of times. I've been really impressed by his compete level. And I think that's the thing that sticks out most. I mean, you know, he has a great skill set, the skating ability, the offensive flair, 26 goals to lead all CHL defensemen. And the thing about Bowen is he's been able to carry on that fine play through the playoffs in some, you know, in some difficult and challenging situations. So I love that he has all of that offensive flair. But I got to tell you, John, I think one thing that's really, really helped him here, and, you know, usually we talk about those offensive defensemen and we worry about their ability to defend. And I don't think that's quite the same problem with most people that would be considered in that class. A big reason for that, John, I believe, is the fact that you look at Jamie Heward, who I think did such a brilliant job in Swift Current, former NHL defenseman himself, and a guy who has a unique ability to relate to young players, especially at that position. And I think he's had a real big impact on what Bowen has been able to do, more so in the subtleties on the game, the defensive side, stick position, body position, and better making him able to defend. Now, there is some risk in the game. He does play a lot of minutes. They do lean on heavily on him for offense. And some of that is going to have to be scaled back at the next level. But I'm always a fan of a guy that you'd rather try and take stuff away as opposed to try and encourage him to do more, and I think Bowen fits that mold perfectly.
All right, a guy that you just saw up close and personal for the last three games, real big body centerman there that really put that on display, especially in game three and that beauty goal as well in Prince Albert, Kirby Dach. You have him at number eight, and you know maybe the way that he has started this series, maybe he has grown a bit in your mind here just with your rankings, but there's a lot to like about Kirby Dach, I'm sure, as well.
6'3", 200-plus-pound right shot center. That package doesn't come very often. And then you add the skating ability, his ability to handle the puck, again, with speed. And it was a fascinating three games in watching this guy. And I think Kirby was extremely lucky in the fact that Saskatoon, being a bigger center, allowed more scouts to come out and see him in that game three, where of the first three games, that was where he was at his best. If I go back to game one, you know, of course, you had the adversity of Mark Abscheid, the Prince Albert coach, specifying his name as to one of those guys that he feels dives as part of what Saskatoon does, whether you believe that narrative or not. I think still to have that placed on you as a 17-year-old can be a difficult challenge. And so when he walked into Prince Albert, immediately he was getting booed. And from a club perspective, every time he touched the puck, he was being bumped, he was being handled, they were getting up into his face. And I don't think Kirby responded particularly well to that. In game two, however, I saw more of the game that I wanted to see by taking the puck to the net, by using that big body to shield the puck, by saying, you are going to have to stop me going from that. And against one of the best defenders in all of the Western Hockey League, Braden Bahal, on game three, the game got even better, where he was more physically engaged, where he was battling in front of the net, where I thought the one area that I would have liked to have seen him do more in game three is distribute a little bit more, use his teammates a little bit more. But that's a little bit of immaturity in his game. That's getting back at home ice after being booed for two games in games one and two. And so he took all of that and said, you know what, I'll show you guys. And I think that's what put a tiny bit of selfishness in his game in game number three. But I really like the complete game. So I really think from game one to game three, his game improved immensely.
Guest is Sam Cosentino from Rogers Sportsnet as he follows the CHL across from coast to coast. And you have another WHL player in your top 10 to round it out, and maybe a little bit hidden there in Cranbrook with the Kootenay Ice. But, you know, Peyton Krebs definitely got a lot of looks all season long here. Peyton Krebs at number 10, what do you see with his game, and do you think he can be a top 10 guy?
I had the chance, John, to meet him at the Sherwin-Williams Top Prospects game. And at that point, you got a sense for what this kid is all about when it comes to character. And not that I necessarily needed that meeting or to spend time with him there or our interview process made me think that he might be void of character when you consider the fact that he's a 17-year-old captain, rebuilding team, doesn't have that young group with him to play with him, and also the fact that they've dealt with that moving issue all season long, plus all the pressure of a draft year. Yet this guy handled it, still was able to put up more than a point per game, tailed off a little bit in the end. But that showed me all kinds of character. He never complained, he never whined, he never asked for a trade, he just went about his business. And all the scouts I talked to throughout those difficult times, he was the hardest working guy in the game, or at least the hardest working guy on his team. And so that speaks volumes. And then you go and you sit down and you meet the guy and you realize he's got unbelievable character. He's dedicated in terms of his off-ice workouts. He's a big CrossFit guy, so that's something he appreciates. And now we move to the on-ice product, and you see a guy who blends that great work ethic with unbelievable skill, playmaking abilities. And I, John, for one, I'm really looking forward to watching him at the World Under-18, because he, too, will get back into a place where he's comfortable knowing some of the players he's going to play with. He'll play with higher-end guys than he had the opportunity to play with Kootenay. And I think you'll get a real sense over the course of five or six games to see what Peyton Krebs is all about.
All right, Sam, I tell you, it's been a lot of fun here this year with the WHL and the draft-eligible players here. It should be a great couple of days in Vancouver in June as well. We appreciate your work. Great job in that series with Saskatoon and Prince Albert. We hope to see you back out our way here soon, okay?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, John. I really appreciate it.
22 teams, one goal. This is the WHL This Week Radio Edition.
The WHL has announced its conference finalists for the Doug Wickenheiser Memorial Trophy as the WHL's Humanitarian of the Year. Will Warm of the Edmonton Oil Kings has been named the Eastern Conference Humanitarian of the Year, along with Jared Dimitru of the Vancouver Giants in the Western Conference. Will Warm decided to make his impact off the ice while recovering from his knee surgery, spending time giving back to countless others through an initiative that was eventually coined Will Warms the Community. The biggest benefactor of Worm's efforts has been the Ronald McDonald House Charities, RMHC. Worm's generosity knows no bounds. After recovering from knee surgery, he continued delivering Will Worm's the community. Meanwhile, from the moment he arrived in Vancouver, Jared Dimitru has been an integral contributor to the on- and off-ice success of the Giants. The native of Craven, Saskatchewan, took it upon himself to lead the Giants in all aspects of their operation after unveiling the Be a Giant initiative. Dimitru was the first player to volunteer his time to visit schools throughout the Lower Mainland to encourage local youth to be Giants in their schools, homes, communities, and for their own personal health. In February, Dimitru took the lead as the Giants visited Fleetwood Arena in Surrey to cheer on 11-year-old Giants fan named Amelia. Dimitru sparked the creation of a number of signs the Giants brought along to cheer Amelia on with. Now, the impact on Amelia was incredible. Selectively mute, Amelia has been attending Giants games and encouraging her favorite players, the signs, for years. Her connection with the Giants has helped her overcome many challenges, and having Dimitru and his Giants teammates visit her own hockey practice meant the world to her. Congratulations to Jared Dimitru. Winner will be announced at the WHL Awards Ceremony in May. Hey, that's the show. Want to say thanks to Andrew Peard in Edmonton for his help, and great to catch up with Sam Cosentino as well. I'm John Keane. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Western Hockey League in cooperation with the WHL Broadcast Partners.